remember there was this time in the store where it was later on in the shortage, and I had what I wanted in my hand, and it was the last one on the shelf, and there was a dad in the aisle, and I saw him, like, looking at the empty shelf of what I had just taken.
When American parents faced a sudden shortage of baby formula last year, the crisis turned routine trips to the grocery store into sometimes complicated moral dilemmas.
I had the last package in my hand. He looked at that spot on the shelf and was like, I couldn't tell if he just was looking at the shelves in general or if that was the product that he needed. I just asked him, like, is this what you need?
That's a situation most of us have thankfully not had to encounter. American grocery stores are wondrous places, celebrations of prosperity and plenty, everything at your fingertips, until suddenly, empty store shelves force new parents to scramble to find enough formula to keep their infants fed. One of those new parents was my friend Kenzie.
My name is Kenzie Giacomo. I have one child. One and done, so Mom, if you're listening, quit asking.
Kenzie's daughter, Cora, was born just before the baby formula shortage hit in the spring of 2022.
She was born 6 weeks early, so actually in the beginning of her formula life, she was using a special high-calorie formula.
And that's why Kenzie found herself on that day last summer staring down a dad in the formula aisle of her neighborhood store. Two needy parents with two hungry kids and only one package of formula to go around.
I just asked him, like, is this what you need? Luckily, he's like, no, that's not what I need specifically. But it was a kind of a tender moment of solidarity.
I'm Eric Boehm, and you're listening to a Reason Magazine podcast series about how bad government policies screw over everyone in order to benefit the special interests that often have a hand in writing those rules. Protectionism makes us all poorer, often in ways that we don't really notice or think about. But occasionally, those policies spiral out of control in ways that simply can't be ignored. That's what happened during the great baby formula shortage of 2022, when the formula aisles of grocery stores suddenly resembled scenes from the old Soviet Union. It was a crisis caused by anti-competitive regulations and bad trade policy, years in the making, and it left a lot of American parents wondering why we can't have nice things.
A devastating shortage has left supermarket shelves empty across the country. Parents are turning to milk banks and to social media, searching for formula to swap or to buy.
When you walk into the store and there you don't see that packaging, there's nothing there to get, you start to panic. Like, what am I going to feed my baby? You think to what you have in your kitchen. How many more bottles is that going to get you? How many more days is that going to get you? And you start just thinking, if I can't get this formula, how is my baby going to eat?
The baby formula supply shock started with contamination issues at Abbott Nutrition's plant in Sturgis, Michigan. That plant was shut down by the FDA in February of 2022. It wouldn't reopen until June, and it would be late summer before the plant was operating at full capacity again. Additionally, Abbott had to recall some of its products, including the popular Similac brand.
My very first encounter was actually scrolling through Reddit, seeing that the Similac recall had happened. So that was the start of it for me, because Cora was on, that's the formula she was using, was Similac. So at that point, you know, you go downstairs, you look at your supply and flip over the cans and see what is part of the recall. So that takes out like half of your storage. And then you just start looking for replacements.
The same thing was happening in stockrooms of grocery stores and pharmacies around the country, and replacements were hard to find. Somehow a problem with a single producer at a single factory had triggered a national crisis.
Within a matter of 3 months, out-of-stock rates moved from 28% to 75%. And that's because retailers were essentially in a bind.
That's Gabriella Beaumont-Smith, a trade policy analyst at the Cato Institute. Beaumont-Smith has been closely following the baby formula crisis since it began. She says that the formula for the crisis actually has two parts. First, there's the tightly regulated domestic market.
So the company Abbott Nutrition has over 55% of U.S. market share. The remainder is basically split between two other companies. This plant on its own, though, produces almost 40% of U.S. formula. And the other two players that exist were just, they don't have the production capacity to service the U.S. market.
If retailers, and by extension, parents and customers, couldn't refill their supplies with American-made baby formula, perhaps they could look to suppliers in other countries. Ah, but that's where the second problem appears.
But there are these distribution channels that are basically not established because it's too costly, and these tariffs are absurdly high. Between 2012 and 2021, most imports of infant formula were subject to tariffs over 25%. And we're talking about baby formula. This is a necessity, and we shouldn't be taxing it that high or at all.
Europe is home to some of the world's largest producers of baby formula. But high tariffs make those products uncompetitive in the American market. So those producers have no incentive to spend the time and money that it would take to get FDA approval to sell their products to Americans. If you're a domestic formula maker, that's a pretty sweet deal. Your competitors from overseas face a tax and regulatory scheme that effectively bans them from getting on American store shelves. As a result, roughly 98% of baby formula consumed in America before the crisis was produced by American companies. And most Americans probably had no idea about this, at least not until last summer when the FDA lifted some of those rules and Congress temporarily suspended the tariffs.
I saw in the news that, like, oh, other countries, they're finally allowing other countries to bring stuff in. And I was like, wait a minute, we weren't allowing? Like, I had no idea that that was even a thing that we prevented, that was even an option that could have happened sooner. It just was like, it opened my eyes to some of the limitations we put on ourselves and things we prevent from happening just in our market. It made me realize, like, oh, we're kind of doing this to ourselves.
It's the classic case of concentrated benefits. These small groups win big, and the costs are dispersed among Americans who don't have the time to focus on what these small groups are doing. Parents are busy raising their children. They don't have time to create coalitions to lobby the government to make sure that they have free trade and lower barriers to other formula producers to make sure that their formula is cheaper. They're just going to pay it because the thing that they need at the end of the day is to feed their baby.
The baby formula shortage laid bare many of the problems with this protectionist racket, but some American parents had already learned about this the hard way and had become outlaws just to feed their babies.
My name is Kelly Pierce. I am a digital media associate with the R Street Institute.
Kelly's son, Nathan, suffered from serious heartburn when he was an infant.
He would just be so uncomfortable. He'd just be constantly crying.
Diagnosing a baby with heartburn, it turns out, is not an easy task.
I can't tell you how many times we were in the pediatrician's office, and as a mom, it was very, very frustrating. It just was so frustrating.
Eventually, Kelly asked her pediatrician about switching her son to formula made from goat's milk, which may be easier for some babies to digest. But there was another problem.
The only, like, mass-produced, really, goat's milk formula were European brands.
Even before the great formula shortage of 2022, and even for parents who don't have babies with special dietary needs, Beaumont Smith says that European-made formula was becoming more popular.
American parents actually import for personal use a lot of European formula because they prefer it. It's a lot of goat milk-based formula that's become very popular in the U.S. But it's not accessible to people, and it should be accessible because we're talking about babies, but it's not accessible because of the tariffs.
Not every formula is going to work for every baby, right? You know, babies are going to have different needs, but it's that variety and that choice is so important. It's not just price. It's also about comfort and quality of life. Here's a perfectly safe product that, again, we're just saying no to because reasons or special interest groups.
For Kelly, the solution was found on the black market. Sort of. Through various websites, she was able to buy formula that's technically illegal to sell in the United States. At one point, she found
a supplier in Las Vegas, and so even with this English formula that uses New Zealand goats, they were getting shipments from Holland.
Now that's globalization. When one site mysteriously vanished, she found another. When one shipment didn't arrive, she scrambled to find an alternative. It was a pain, but she says it was worth it in the end.
I don't think people understand that as a mom, you would do anything to help your child. Anything whatsoever to give them the slightest bit of comfort. And we have to remember, again, my son was having severe heartburn. You know, as a fully grown adult, that hurts pretty badly. Imagine a baby with an even more sensitive stomach having to go through that constantly for 6 months, and then you're told you cannot access a perfectly safe product because some bureaucrat says so.
You are on some level a criminal.
I was a flagrant lawbreaker, and I have no regrets of doing that.
During last year's shortage, Kenzie remembers facing a moral dilemma, too.
I remember this one time I had gone to a Target, and I was so excited because I actually, there was nothing on the shelves, but my app said there was something in stock. So I went up to the front desk, which is against my nature. I hate doing that. I don't want to interact with people. But I talked to the customer service and they're like, well, we also show that there's some in stock. So let me go in the back and look. And they came out with three containers. And they're like, this is what we have. Is this what you need? And my eyes lit up. I was like, yes, that's the stuff. He's like, well, do you want all three?
That's not an easy question.
Okay. Do I want all three? Yes. Does somebody else need one? Yes. So I only took two. I left one. And then walking out to the car, I was like, in my head, I was thinking, do I need to put these in a bag that people can't see them? Am I going to get like attacked on the way out? Like, no, it never got to that for me. But I think in some areas it did. Like people were very aggressive about making sure they got what they need.
So what did you do? Did you like hide it or try to run to your car?
I moved it from carrying it in my arms in front of me and kind of tucked it under my arms and walked a little bit faster.
Let's pause for a moment just to acknowledge how completely ridiculous this is. You shouldn't need a secret hookup to buy baby formula. And you shouldn't worry about getting mugged while buying it either. A combination of protectionist trade policy and overbearing regulations forced Kelly and Kenzie to behave like they were trying to buy black tar heroin, not Similac and goat's milk formula. Why is this happening? Why can't we have nice things? If we're looking for a culprit, Beaumont Smith knows where we should start looking.
So the dairy lobby, dairy farmers have a lot of support from the U.S. government aside from infant formula. There are pricing schemes that provide milk farmers with minimum prices for their milk. It also covers dry milk, which is the base part of infant formula.
The effect of these policies is to artificially hike the price of milk. That's good for American dairy farmers who get paid more for their products, but it means everyone buying those products faces higher costs, including formula manufacturers.
So if you have freer trade in milk, those dairy farmers are afraid of being what they would say is undercut, but it's really just price competition, by foreign milk producers. And so what they do is lobby the government to have trade restrictions put in place to make foreign milk and dairy products more expensive.
So to recap, because the federal government artificially inflates the price of milk, it also has to artificially intervene in the market to prevent cheaper milk products, like baby formula, from competing with the more expensive American-made stuff. There's nothing unhealthy or dangerous about European-made formulas, but they are kept off American shelves for economic reasons. And sure, we're picking on the milk producers lobby today, but this same thing happens all the time.
Yes, absolutely. It happens in lots of industries, steel, fruit, vegetables. I mean, countless examples of where interest groups lobby the government to get protection, not even just from international players, but even from other U.S. industries.
The contamination at the Abbott plant in Michigan might have exposed the flaws in this strategy, but did it also give policymakers a reason to fix them? Yes. Did they take advantage of it? Not really. The first big federal action in response to the formula crisis was the White House's Operation Fly Formula. That involved using military planes to carry formula into the U.S. from Europe.
This massive Air Force C-17 plane landed in the U.S. Sunday carrying precious cargo, 78,000 pounds of hypoallergenic formula from Switzerland.
These are the first two flights of Operation Fly Formula as the Biden administration works to ease a nationwide shortage.
But wait a second. There are ships and planes going back and forth between the U.S. and Europe all the time, carrying all sorts of other goods.
I mean, the number of flights they would have had to make to get enough formula into the U.S. to solve the 75% out of stock rates would have been astronomical.
It's a classic case of the government causing a problem, then presenting itself as the solution to the mess it made. We didn't need Joe Biden to heroically fly baby formula to the U.S. from Europe. We needed the market to be allowed to work in the first place.
The president flew in formula starting in May, and a month later, out-of-stock rates were still rising to over 90%.
Members of Congress also gave the FDA a stern talking to.
Like all of my colleagues here, I'm hearing from my constituents. Granite staters have shared with me their struggles to obtain formula for their infants.
That's New Hampshire Senator Maggie Hassan speaking to FDA Commissioner Robert Califf at a hearing last year.
And as we all know, formula for many, if not most of these babies, is a matter of life and death. Their parents are desperate and terrified.
Eventually, Califf even admitted that the FDA had screwed up at the start of the crisis, and the agency agreed to ease some of its regulations with the goal of letting more foreign formula into the United States. It took until July for Congress to take action. That's when lawmakers passed a bill temporarily lifting the baby formula tariffs.
The one silver lining from this crisis is that the FDA did try to expedite pathways to become approved in the U.S. formula market if you are a foreign manufacturer. And they did approve 8 new companies, and those companies don't have to comply with all of these regulations until October 2025. That's a good thing.
And it seems to have worked. In the second half of 2022, legal imports of baby formula quadrupled compared to the same 6 months during the previous year. That's great news, and not just because it helped alleviate the shortage. More imports mean more choices for all parents trying to buy formula. But in January, the tariffs on baby formula returned, and that's exactly what the milk producers' lobby wanted.
So those people who were buying the newly approved formula last year automatically are going to have to pay a higher price for the same formula this year just because of the tariffs. So now we are at a point where last year the FDA expedited the approval process for new manufacturers, primarily from abroad, to be approved to sell formula in the U.S. But now because of the tariffs, those manufacturers are their products are automatically more expensive. So these manufacturers are working on becoming compliant with the FDA's regulations. They have until October 2025 to do that, but they are immediately at a disadvantage because they either have to share the cost of the tariff, eat the cost of the tariff, or completely pass it on to consumers.
But now that the acute crisis seems to have passed, there's little reason to believe that Congress or the White House will take up the cause of tariff relief for American babies. For example, a bill sponsored by Senator Mike Lee of Utah that would permanently remove the tariffs on imported baby formula, well, it's attracted just 5 co-sponsors this year.
It's so frustrating because, you know, there's so many babies in that position that could be helped. And the government just is like, nah, I don't think so. What if there's a parent whose baby is or has more delicate health than my son? Why should they be denied the chance to buy European formula, especially as that product is perfectly safe? Like, that's insane to me.
The good news here is that both little Nathan and baby Cora are doing great, and neither is on formula anymore.
She is now a happy, healthy, thriving 15, 16-month-old, so we made it.
He is doing great. He is super smart. He has all the ladies at his daycare wrapped around his finger, and he is super strong, too.
When Nathan gets old enough, Kelly says she might tell him about the crazy lengths that his mom had to go to keep him fed.
Well, you know, if he's doing something naughty, I'm going to, like, absolutely bear down and go, like, excuse me, You know how much money I spent to feed you, to make sure that you were safe and comfortable? You know, so I broke the law.
Kenzie says she's just happy to have this whole mess behind her.
I think, you know, as important as it was in the moment, I'm sure I will forget about it, which is another problem that we have. Like, we should remember this and change things so it doesn't happen again.
For Reason Magazine, I'm Eric Boehm. You've been listening to the first episode of Why We Can't Have Nice Things, a six-part podcast series exploring how the free market wants to deliver the goods and how the government keeps getting in the way. Your reviews help us spread the word about this podcast, so if you like what you've heard here, please review and subscribe. Next week in episode 2, we'll take a look at the hidden taxes that make shoes, clothes, even underwear more expensive. All of that is thanks to a part of the U.S. tariff code that hasn't been updated in nearly 100 years. Those taxes hit women harder than men, and low-income families end up paying the most. In some cases, this is protectionism for industries that don't even exist here anymore, because political inertia is one of the many reasons why we can't have nice things. Today's episode was written by Eric Boehm. It was produced and edited by Hunt Beatty, with additional editing by Ian Kaiser. This episode, along with the show's trailer, was mixed by Luke Allen. Today's episode was fact-checked by Catherine Seifer. Our executive editor is Jim Epstein. Special thanks to today's guests, Kenzie Giacomo, Kelly Pierce, and Gabrielle Beaumont-Smith. To read more about the baby formula crisis and the poor government policies that caused it, check out Beaumont-Smith's work at cato.org, including her recent policy paper titled Formula for a Crisis.